The following is a presentation of the High Spot Podcast. Making their way to the ring, talking about the world of professional wrestling, the team of Jeff Martin and the trendsetter, Brian Perga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
What is going on, guys? You're listening to the High Spot Podcast. I am Jeff Martin alongside the trendsetter, Brian Berger, my tag team partner in crime. Follow us on all our social media at High Spot Podcast. Follow us on bodyslam.net. Also, the B-Plus Player Radio Network and Shining Wizards. We are available on all social media platforms. And, of course, trendsetter, another amazing episode for you guys here tonight on the show. What's going on, man? So much wrestling. We go from a week where it was a person who doesn't like WWE, where you got MLW Slammiversary, the G1, and now you go to Extreme Rules, and then also you've got all Fight for the Fallen. It's going to be another great week of wrestling, a great weekend. And Trendsetter, I am first and foremost happy to be joined by you once again.
Well, I could hope to say the feeling isn't mutual, though, but I do appreciate that, Jeff. But yeah, I'm kind of dealing with a whole wrestling hangover. I don't know. I don't drink. I stay clean in terms of that. But
are,
man,
you hungover from the G1?
I'm hungover from wrestling in general. Now we're going to be talking about Extreme Rules. We're going to be breaking that down a little bit too. But, you know, in terms of the days, Jeff, when you and I first started doing this podcast, in terms of it, we were kind of concerned, is there going to be a lot of variety here? Are we going to have the ability to create variety? Now it's like pick your poison or pick your choice, basically, here. You know, you have so many things to choose from, so many things to break down. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to break down what we have in terms of the G1. We have to talk about Slammiversary and leading up to Extreme Rules.
And again, we have a great show lined up for you. So many topics. Going to try to squeeze it in here on today's episode. We've got Shelly Pack and Josh Sutherland of Chasing Molly. They will join us. Of course, Kurt Angle is part of that movie. It is out now on Blu-ray and DVD and on Amazon. So you want to make sure you check that out. We'll talk to them. The writer, Josh Sutherland, and Shelly Pack, who also stars in the movie as well. So they will join us in a little bit, but where do we start, man? I mean, last week I was looking forward to it. The summer, we're getting into the middle of summer. Hope everyone had a happy 4th of July. And so, you know, the G1 is coming to Dallas, and looking forward to that. The MLW had a tremendous show. Slammiversary killed it, I believe, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit. But where do you want to start off with? The G1, MLW, Slammiversary? What really caught your eye? I think you're going to say to me, Jeff, it was the G1 all the way.
Well, you just read my mind, so why'd you ask me the question, Jeff? Definitely, it was the G1. It was something I was looking forward to. It's going to be the first time, at least myself, you know, I wasn't going to be backtracking and trying to catch up. I was actually going to watch it from the events that led to Dallas to, you know, what's going to be building up right now to a, you know, bracket or block A. And now we're going to move on to the other blocks of the G1. Really excited about that. So let's talk about the one that I was looking forward to the most, the G1.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Now, a lot of people shared their photos. A lot of people are very big on attendance. A lot of people like to kind of disparage the arena and where it took place. It was like a 20,000-seat arena, the American Airlines Center. But besides that, we already talked about the promotion heading into it. Moxley wasn't going to be there. So you know that, you know, if they would have had 5,000, 6,000, it would have been successful. I think they achieved it. I think for this way of advertising that they really did a good job. And the matches, Trendsetter, were outstanding. You got the tag team matches that kind of previewed the Block B, and then you got the Block A matches, and they did not disappoint. Of course, you had Tanahashi and Okada, which was another great match. You had Ospreay and Lance Archer in one, which was really surprising. Again, if you guys, you know, want to catch a top wrestler out there, it is Will Ospreay. So what matchup do you think stole the show? Which matchup do you want to start off with? Which one did you like?
Well, for me, I mean, this wasn't the event that actually kicked off the G1, but something that kicked off the excitement for me, and that was watching Will Ospreay, Jeff. We've been talking about Will Ospreay since, you know, the time that, you know, he was competing for the light junior heavyweight championship. It was just something that it seems like right now, more than ever, a guy like Will Ospreay is at that cusp right now of becoming that major star that he wants to be in New Japan. So let's start with that one. That one really excited me. That was the one you actually texted me. Jeff actually physically texted me and said, you know what, Jeff Braun, you got to watch this. I turned it on. I was able to turn the access and see what an amazing match. And in terms of, you know, Will Ospreay had a press conference and talked about how, you know, how physically demanding it is and how beat up his body is. But when you see him in the ring, you could barely tell the guy was feeling anything because the guy was jumping up and down like he was on a trampoline.
Yeah, and Will Ospreay at the press conference and the showcase beforehand, it was kind of like a little a weird press conference because you could tell that, you know, he really shared a lot of stuff. He was talking about, you know, the rigors of being on the road, doesn't like to travel, you know, the mental aspect and how sometimes, you know, it's hard to get out of bed, but you know, it's the cheering of the audience. It's the 10,000 fans that he wrestles in front of in Japan, and the fans that he's you know here for in Dallas. And you know, you got to delve into a little bit of Will Ospreay, and he does not let anything that he's going through carry over into the ring. So we just want to take the time out and just, you know, hope Will Ospreay is doing better now, and he gets off to a surprising 0-1 start, not getting any points, loses to Lance Archer via the claw, and that was an outstanding match. I really thought Ospreay was going to get the victory there, so that was a surprising one. And of course, you had Tanahashi and you had Okada, which to me was just a rivalry renewed. Another great match. Okada gets the 2 points, and you have Okada and Archer up there in the blockade with 2 points. You have Tanahashi and Ospreay with 0 points. You had Zack Sabre Jr. With a great match with Sonata. So, and of course, Bad Luck Fale doing, you know, bad luck things there to Evil. So you got a little taste of what blockade is going to look like. And we never got a chance to preview the G1, and you know, you had Kota Ibushi also lose to Kenta, which was another match that I was looking forward to there. So, you know, Kenta had a lot to prove, making sure that he's not done, and he, you know, at the press conference said that, you know, I'm far from done, so he has something to prove here, and he gave Kota Ibushi the GTS to go to sleep for the victory. Surprising that
the move that he made famous.
Surprising that Ibushi lost his opening matchup, but there's still a long way to go. I still think, to me, that the winner is going to be Kota Ibushi. I think he's the favorite. There's just so much talent in there. You don't know who to pick, which is great because it is wide open because everyone can make a claim to winning this G1 Climax 29 this year.
You're right. Everybody can make a claim, but as much as I hate to admit it, Jeff, I have to agree with you because I really do feel this whole thing is built on Kota Ibushi finally getting his moment of winning the G1, then taking it all the way to Wrestle Kingdom in Tokyo, Japan, and, you know, winning the championship, whether it be against Okada or whoever the champion might be at that time. Most likely it's going to be Okada, but I think at this time it's built around it. I think it was pretty interesting the fact that he lost against Kenta, but I think also at the same time, if you're going to build up a guy like Kenta right now who's coming back, has had a horrible stint in WWE since his shoulder injury, had a lot of momentum in WWE since his shoulder injury, then had so many relapses and fell back a lot.
And then he goes to 205 Live, and then he has to release, and the next thing you know, now he shows up in New Japan.
And it's clear things weren't going his way. Goes to breathe new life back in Japan, has something to prove, has that chip on his shoulder. But I still think, as good as it is, it's building up Kenta to be that priority figure in terms of people are going to focus on him, because you know what? He still has a lot more to offer New Japan. I think it's still built on Kota Ibushi dealing with adversity, especially early on, being that kind of, you know, the Daniel Bryan, if you want to compare it to, you know, basically being the person that nobody's expecting him to win because the odds are stacked against him. He's going to breeze by and actually advance by the skin of his teeth. I still think it's built for Kota Ibushi.
Yeah, and then, of course, so you have a tremendous G1, and then, you know, props to MLW. They had a tremendous event as well, King of Coliseum, and you have a brand new MLW World Champion in Jacob Fatu. We're going to get to him in a little bit here, who defeats Filthy Tom Lawler, and you have a new World Champion for MLW. MLW now will have their very own first pay-per-view in November in Chicago. So it just shows you that wrestling is on an amazing streak here. Now, MLW will get into the pay-per-view business.
Especially Chicago, that wrestling town.
Everyone's going to Chicago. Bound for Glory will be in Chicago. Chicago, I believe in October. So everyone now
got all
like,
out.
It looks like all out. It looks like the epicenter of wrestling towards the end of the year will be in Chicago. And of course, other stuff coming out of it is Fighting Spirit Unleashed heads to the East Coast in September, and it's safe to say that we will be there. If not for the Hammerstein Ballroom, definitely go to the Philadelphia, the ECW Arena, 2300.
Who knows, you might go to both.
We might go to both. So yeah, there's a very good chance though. So that is an announcement, and also too that no Ring of Honor on that schedule. There will be there will be not working together for that tour. Tickets go on sale on July the 26th. So if you love New Japan and you've been here on the East Coast and you can only see it through the War of the Worlds, if it's ever come to your area on the East Coast, you can catch it here, New Japan, in September. So definitely want to check that out, man.
Did that catch your eye a lot? The fact that Ring of Honor is not a part of this event, at least this card? Because it seems right now, at least like Jeff and I have been talking about it, we've talked about it during the show, we've talked about it off air as well, about how, AEW is gaining this momentum. They have one big more event. I mean, they have two more events, but again, the one that everybody's looking forward to is All Out. And then before you know it, they're going to be on TNT. Is a partnership brewing, you feel, or the likelihood of something going on between them and New Japan Pro Wrestling, or them or Ring of Honor? Because it really feels, from my vantage point, Jeff, I want to hear your opinion, it seems like Ring of Honor right now might be on the outside looking in on this whole tidal wave of momentum.
Yeah, obviously they've been affected the most since losing the Elite. That's also been a subject too on Twitter, on social media, of just the impact of the Elite leaving New Japan and the Ring of Honor. I don't know. I don't want to look too deep into it just yet. Maybe as we head into September, maybe more news will show up and just exactly what has happened. Maybe they're just not working on this one event. But yeah, of course, it's going to lead to speculation that AEW is going to, get in there, and that's going to be the key for New Japan's success, is to team up again with those Elite guys. And you get a lot of dream matches as well. But right now, New Japan, I think any decision that they make won't be done till after 2019. And obviously, they've made it secret that they want to work with Kenny again. They'd be open to it. So you never know. And the only way that would work, and maybe you can get Kenny into the States and have him, fight under the New Japan flag, is if he was under, the AEW and New Japan banner. So again, though, it's like speculation, but when Mike Johnson tweeted out, you kind of have to have your eyes open to it, because you're like, oh, okay, no Ring of Honor in New Japan. We've all been talking about this before, but New Japan is loyal. Did something happen at the G1 Supercard at MSG, that kind of maybe soured a little bit the relationship? But again, just speculation. So as we head towards the fall, we'll find out if indeed there is, some kind of turmoil with Ring of Honor. But for right now,
I want to think about the fall right now.
you love this summer weather. We just got off the 4th of July. Before you know it, it's going to be August. But,
shut up, Jeff.
Enjoy
shut
every
up.
Every single freaking day.
I mean that more than ever. Just shut up. Let's enjoy the summer.
Well, you got to talk about all this wrestling, though, man.
I know, but come on, let's All Out will eventually happen. All Out will be in the end of August. Let's worry about that when it occurs.
Okay. All right. Fine. So we'll move on to Slammiversary, and we're gonna have a little difference of opinion here, because I thought it was all in all a very, very good show by Impact Wrestling. I think the Sami Callihan versus Tessa Blanchard match was really good. Again, Tessa Blanchard showing that she's a star. Sami Callihan can have a match with anybody. He just draws those eyes, and they had a very good match. And then Brian Cage and Michael Elgin, to me, was without a doubt cruiserweights and heavyweights body doing amazing things. And say what you want about Michael Elgin, there's a lot of people that don't like him. People think of the Brian Cage as just a muscle guy. But you know what? You watch this match, and I thought to myself, man, this could be a match of the year candidate. And you had two matches there that could have been match of the year candidates in one night. Slammiversary is their show, and they did a good job. Now, whether they're bragging and saying that it was the best show so far of the year, I'm still going to say Double or Nothing. Just your thoughts, Trendsetter, on Slammiversary.
It served its purpose. Now, basically, Slammiversary, I'm kind of
you tell Ross Foreman that, man.
I'll tell Ross himself, exactly, when we're on the podcast. But I think, for what you described, the main event was what I thought was what kind of solidified the show. Brian Cage and Michael Elgin. I think I enjoyed it from the vantage point of the athleticism behind it. But,
Jeff, well, the main event was Tessa and
Sammy. Of course. Yeah. The main event was Tessa and Sammy. But, Jeff, you're always going to get the purist saying, you know, the guys this size, guys powerful shouldn't be doing these moves, and sometimes it looks awkward. I think there's still more to be done with that. I wasn't entirely super over the top of the match. That was good, but maybe a lot of it had to do with the fact that Brian Cage is still legitimately injured, and so they probably can do everything they wanted to do. And, you know, nowadays you want to pace yourself and leave things for the storyline, which I think has not finished or has not concluded by any stretch of imagination. But I have to give credit where credit is due. As much as I didn't like much of the undercard, the main event, Tessa Blanchard and Sami Callihan, you said it yourself too, Tessa Blanchard proves again and again why that she's going to be a star. But Sami Callihan's proven that he is a star, and he's been a star for Impact for several years now and showcased his talent forefront. So I think, you know, as much as people want to give praise to Tessa Blanchard and the final end, you know, where Sami gives her the bat and leaves her in the ring to show that sign of respect, which is kind of awkward for me, because if you're Sami Callihan,
you give no respect.
You don't do that, regardless if it's doing the honors and being, you know, that moment supposedly of giving it to her and having her bask in the glory of the audience. But for me, it's like, it signifies the fact that, man, Sami Callihan is the draw. As much as it's hate to steal his catchphrase, but it's true. He's the draw. He's the one that sold this paper. He's the one that made people want to watch it. And it just shows, again, the fact that he hasn't even reached the potential of his talent. So this main event was definitely good. I liked it for what it was worth. I don't know. Do you think we've seen the end of it? Do you think it's going to continue for a round two?
You know what? Obviously, the thing would be maybe they do it one more time and, you know, Tessa comes out victorious. But I love the way they did it, though, because the way to go would have been for Tessa to come out victorious and to add the little swerve where, you know, Sami Callihan wins. To me, I think it was believable. I think that maybe they want to make Tessa here sympathetic so that they root for her even more. But the crowd was into it, man.
So it's more of the moral victory for Tessa Blanchard.
It was the moral victory. You know, her first match against the dudes not her first match, but now she's obviously wrestling a lot of intergender matches. She's going to be. I don't think it's the last one. So I think that, she had one against Disco Inferno before that. So so I think some people are not going to like it because it's a man versus a woman. Some people love intergender wrestling. There's a line in between that I fall under where it was entertaining. And you know what? They made it believable. They didn't go too crazy here. The bat, maybe, like, if you're going to hit a woman with the bat, I mean, it's going to knock her out. It's going to knock anybody out. So that was one thing.
Ask Eddie Edwards.
And again, it was a great match, whatever you think about it. And then, of course, Eli Drake was the guy that was supposed to fight Tessa Blanchard, but it was one of the reasons why he is no longer in Impact Wrestling. He did not want to get involved in the intergender match. Sami Callihan takes, you know, maybe that spot from Eli Drake, and look what Sami Callihan did. He made this into something that's talked about, and he strongly believes that they knocked that out of the ballpark here with Slammiversary, and if he wants to say that they have the best pay-per-view so far of 2019, you know, it's up for argument. I'm still going to say it's Double or Nothing, but Slammiversary was really good.
I still have a difficulty figuring out at what point, Jeff, maybe this is my own issue in terms of I haven't seen enough of the product, though, but at what point did Tessa convert from being a hated heel to now being a crowd favorite?
It's kind of
difficult. Certain individuals and certain characters just fit certain roles, and for me, it's very difficult to see Tessa, regardless of how they've tried to position her in this way. It's kind of hard for me to root for her. I'll root for her because I think she's a hard worker. I think she's that talented, but it's hard for me to root for her from the standpoint of I want to cheer, yes, go, Tessa, go. No,
she's a heel.
I want to boo her.
Because she's that good of a heel. Just like Charlotte, stuff when she's a face, because she's a flair, has that natural heel. Tessa has that natural heel in her being the daughter of Tully Blanchard, though. So,
and the facials that Tessa Blanchard gives, man. I mean, you could definitely feel the pain she was going through.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of it was probably real anyway, but the mere fact that her expression, especially when she was taking that powerbomb and hit up in the guardrail, what a spot.
And before we talk about Chase and Molly, before we get Shelley Pack and Josh Sutherland here on the show, news coming out of that is that LAX, Santana and Ortiz,
my boys,
seem to have completed their shot at Impact Wrestling. They are done with Impact Wrestling.
Contractually obligated.
They've fulfilled it. That was their last night. They dropped the titles to Ethan Page and Josh Alexander a couple days before that at the brewery, Bash at the Brewery in Houston. And so they go into the triple threat match at Slammiversary. They come out unsuccessful. They complete their contract with Impact Wrestling. Hopefully, they're still trying to work things out, but you know, to me, it's on to other things, because you've heard AEW have interest. Of course, WWE is going to have interest.
Yeah.
So if you're Santana and Ortiz, and hopefully Santana really
would Ring of Honor and New Japan. Would have interest.
Their world is their oyster right now. They can pick and choose now. They're going to have a lot of competition of people wanting to sign them. They've made it clear a while ago that WWE was at one point their dream, so maybe they have the edge in that. But wherever they go, whatever they do, they are just one of the world's best top five tag teams right now.
Oh, that's without a question right now. The way it's going to be from a business standpoint, you'd like to think Impact in their best interest would be to try to re-sign these guys. But from what you said, them living out their contract, and it's reached this point now where they've been, they've fulfilled all their obligations, doesn't really look like Impact's going to re-sign them, or they're even willing to re-sign too. It seems like both parties are set to part their ways. Because I think right now, in my personal opinion, LAX has done everything they possibly could do and accomplish in Impact Wrestling.
Yeah, and I think though Impact Wrestling has a price, has a certain level that they won't exceed. And of course, LAX, you know, they're allowed to, and they have every right to go get what they feel they deserve.
Yeah.
And whether it is Impact, AEW, WWE, Ring of Honor, New Japan, they're going to be two hot free agents, that tag team. And
I'm really leaning towards AEW in this point, right? We've seen what they've done with the Young Bucks. We've seen that on the Jericho Cruise. But I think right now, if any company right now, I mean, real quick, Jeff, New Japan, Ring of Honor, and let's talk about MLW, and let's talk about AEW. To me, MLW and AEW are the most likely liable outcomes for me. And here's the reason why. When you look at New Japan and you look at Ring of Honor, they're swarmed with tag teams. They're swarmed with six-man tag teams right now. Who needs six-man tag teams. Who needs tag team division to be built up more? MLW. But also AEW, because right now, what do the Young Bucks want? They want to bring tag team wrestling back to the forefront. They want those to be the main event. And when you look at AEW right now in their roster, not that many tag teams right now going on. So you add in the Young Bucks and then the LAX into that roster, you're creating a tag team division right now, which is going to be building towards the future. And if you want two staples right now of teams right now, and I know I might be leaving a couple teams off, I apologize for that, but the two ones that stick in my mind right now would be the Young Bucks and the LAX. Those would be two great staples in your organization to be the where the bar is set in terms of tag team wrestling.
Yeah, and again, though, where you rank LAX, they need to be in your top five. If you're not,
where do you think they're going to go? If you had to take a guess, say it's not Impact. Let's take Impact out of the equation here. They're going to move on. They're going to build up their own teams now. They've done everything they can in Impact, LAX. Where would you like to see LAX in?
See, I would love to see them in AEW, because I believe they really make tag team wrestling a priority. So does Impact Wrestling. They really do.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong there. But taking them out of the equation, man, I would love to see the Bucks versus LAX. Because you've seen it on the cruise, but you haven't seen it anywhere else.
What about the Briscoes in LAX?
The Briscoes in LAX is another dream matchup, too. How about a New Japan having the Gorillas of Destiny, G.O.D.?
What the fuck are those?
Have them go up against LAX, man. That's
that
great.
Does would
Conan
be huge.
Go with them, or does Conan stay in Impact? And a very interesting point by Josh Matthews saying that without Conan, they kind of lose that maybe focus straight ahead, and it kind of gets sidetracked. Their win-loss record is better with Conan. So it's gonna be...
I know. Part of that, I don't believe. You know why? And I know we talked about this a little bit further than we wanted to, but here's the thing. Conan is an instrument in terms of a voice that gets the message across. But here's the thing. Guys like Santana Ortiz have learned so much from a guy like Conan. I think now, at this point right now, if they're willing to let go of the reins and now kind of be on their own, I think right now is the best time ever, because now they'll finally have voices of their own to kind of dictate who they are. Because, you know, here's the thing. Conan hasn't been there when they've tried to build up matches and tried to build tag team matches for Impact. He hasn't always been there, so they've had to carry most of the weight and the brunt themselves. So I don't agree with Josh Matthews when he says that, because, yes, Conan might have been an integral part of that, but he's not the total LAX.
I mean, you're right. So, again, though, it'll be interesting to see what happens. when we find out the word they do sign, whoever gets them is going to be a very lucky company because
of course,
those two guys are
they'll be printing
amazing.
Money. My brothers from another mother will be printing money for whatever company that they choose to grace their presence with.
Yeah, so the G1 Climax is amazing. MLW, congratulations to Jacob Fatu, who is the new MLW World Champion. And just because he's just had an accelerated rise to the top, this guy has star written all over him, beats Filthy Tom Lawler. You've got another guy here where AEW and WWE are very interested in signing this guy. This guy has been ascending really quick, and he's part of the Samoan dynasty as well. You know, this is a guy that rapidly will be in everyone's TV screens.
Is he related to The Rock?
Everyone's related to The Rock. I think he is. I think he has that relationship there. And so, but this is a guy that will be rapidly on everyone's radar. If you haven't seen him, definitely go check him out. Check out that match. But of course, congratulations to MLW on having their first pay-per-view announcement in November Chicago. So that's great for them. So much wrestling going on. And we're going to take a little swerve here and talk about the loyalty of the wrestling fans to when it comes to movies, because Kurt Angle is in a movie called Chasing Molly, and that's been out now for a little bit, and it stars Shelley Pack, and it's written by Josh Sutherland. Shelley Pack was also a writer on this too, and we had a chance to talk to them about this movie. Again, it is available on Amazon Prime, also on Blu-ray and DVD, so there are so many ways to get this good movie, and again, it's, you know, it's good to see Kurt Angle do stuff that's out of the norm, and it just shows you that wrestling fans will flock to these kind of movies to support their favorite wrestlers. So we had a chance to talk to Shelley Pack and Josh Sutherland, and they join us here on the High Spot Podcast. All right, trendsetter, Chasing Molly is the name of the movie, and right now we're joined by the director and one of the stars and writers of the movie, and that is Josh Sutherland and Shelley Pack. Shelley, how are you? Josh, how are you doing?
Good, man. We're happy to be here. Thank you once again for having us on, and we're excited to talk a little bit about our project, Chasing Molly.
Yeah, thanks again, guys, for having us.
Well, we watched this and thoroughly enjoyed it. And I got to say, one thing you're going to know here as you know, you hear feedback from this is a lot of wrestling fans, especially because you have Kurt Angle in this movie, is that wrestling fans are very loyal and they tend to follow projects by the wrestlers. And you're going to get a lot of feedback of wrestling fans and you're going to get to see how loyal they are. What are your thoughts?
It's been amazing. You know, we are an independent film, so we do our own PR, and we're reaching out and connecting with the fans. And just to hear how much Kurt, you know, is loved and how the fans support him and our film because Kurt's in it. And it's just been really amazing to hear, you know, the dedication and just the love that his fans have for him. And I'm learning all the sayings, you know, it's true, it's damn true, you know, ankle locks. I'm learning the whole thing. I got it all now, down now.
How about you, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, the response has been great. Obviously, you know, we know the wrestling and WWE community is a very strong one. And so, you know, point blank, that's one of the big reasons why we wanted, you know, a kind of a wrestler type person in the film. And when we got Kurt, it was just, you know, over the moon. And we know definitely how big of an impact that can have on such a small independent film like ours.
Now, when you guys first met up with Kurt and was able to agree to have him for this project, were you guys wrestling fans or aware of professional wrestling in general when you guys were growing up?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I grew up and was definitely a WWF back then fan, you know, basically I think, the heyday for me was definitely, you know, Shawn Michaels and Bret Hitman Hart and those guys. But I no joke, I mean, Kurt Angle getting involved with our project was a cold call. When me and Shelley kind of sat down and kind of talked about who I envisioned for Mr. Black, I wanted, you know, a big, muscly kind of guy, preferably almost like a bald head, a loud talker, someone who could really elevate the character and just be like that tough kind of kingpin type boss. And so we started talking about professional wrestlers, and we were talking you know, about a couple other people, and then one day Shelley was like, what about Kurt Angle? And I literally had a laugh out loud moment of being like, I know what we're writing on the page right now, these lines, I don't think he'd be into this. Is that even an option? Is Kurt even on the table? And lo and behold, you know, got in touch with his manager. His manager passed the script along to him. Kurt actually read it. Kurt actually liked it. And, you know, we were then put in touch with his agents and worked the deal out. And, you know, a couple weeks later, Kurt's attached and is going to be on set and part of our movie. And, you know, that's just been kind of the story with our whole film, you know, just been this tiny little project that kind of picks up steam. And it's like this little, I'll say it's this little snowball. You're kind of like rolling down a mountain and slowly it's picking up steam and quietly turns into an avalanche. And so getting Kurt involved with this project was awesome. I was definitely aware of who he was. And I'll forever be in his debt for doing this movie.
You guys have a amazing cast too. How fun was it to be part of this cast, Shelley? You have Felicia Day was part of it. Jim Cashman was it? We know him. Actually, Kurt Angle did an interview before. He mentioned that he does the Progressive commercials, and I didn't really put two and two together till he actually said that. And so, you know, what was it like being part of that cast? It looked like you had a blast doing it.
So this was a really great experience all around, because I know Felicia, I know Jim, I know all the comedians you see in the film. I've been doing improv comedy for a while. That's my background. So when I reached out to Felicia and I reached out to, you know, these A-list improvisers, and I said, listen, I'm doing a movie, because it was me and they knew my work and we performed together, everyone wanted to jump on board and would give us time for the project. And the way we set it up, Josh and I, you know, wrote the story like it's a Run the Gauntlet, where my character would meet different characters along this, you know, day and a half journey. And then, you know, I went and wrote the script in keeping certain comedians in mind, keeping Felicia in mind, keeping the pawn shop guy. And, you know, I don't know. Can you cuss on your show?
Oh, yeah. Cuss away, guys. Cuss away.
The character Skullfucker is a good friend of mine. So I would write the scenes and the dialogue for the comedians. So we didn't do it the way where you get like a casting director or agents to, you know, pitch to their clients that they want to have in a movie. We would reach out to people we really wanted. So we didn't have to audition anybody. We selected these comedians because we knew they were home run hitters and what they were capable of. And I could look back and see almost a career of great performances, because I could look at a cast of people that I've worked with before. And so to have them, everyone say, yeah, we're going to come together for you and we're going to be in your movie. Like you said, it's just like a conglomerate of these great comedians. And it was just really special to be able to bring them together and for this movie. And then they would say to me, Shelley, like, wow, you know, they filmed one or two, three scenes, and they hadn't seen the whole project. So when we had like a friends and family screening to see it all come together, everyone, I think, was pretty blown away by the whole project. It was really, really just an amazing experience.
And Shelley, you play Molly, of course. You're one half of the Demon Cleaners. you guys mean well, but in the end, you know, you guys are, you know, basically con artists here, and you actually accidentally take drugs from Kurt Angle, who's the villain in the movie. So how much of Molly is Shelley? Is it a lot like you, because she's witty, and so how much is she like the character?
So it was really important for me, you know, setting out to do a big project like this, that when this was finally like my coming out moment as an actress, was to be very true to my comedic voice. So Molly is very much, you know, Shelley, that witty, sarcastic, comedic voice. It's very much me. Now, obviously, Shelley in real life doesn't make those life choices. But if far as me, I hope not. For me as a comedian and for what my voice is and my perspective, it was important for me to have that be portrayed as Molly, so that when people see this film, they're like, oh, okay, we get it. We get Shelley. We get her sense of humor, you know? So it was really important for Molly to be very much like me comedically and for it to be my voice. And then people will say like, well, it felt really natural. It's like, well, when you write your own lines for yourself, like it comes, thankfully it comes off natural. Also getting to work with improvisers. They also know how to deliver the jokes very naturally and organically. So the dialogue, it doesn't feel like really heavily scripted or cookie cutter. And that was really important to Josh and I, that we worked with other actors, myself included, that would pull off the dialogue in that way. So it was really important for me, especially as a female comedian in this business. You don't want to be, typecast or pigeonholed or have anyone tell you, oh, this is your comedic voice, because it just won't be. And we're seeing now a trend with women in film where we're not being put in a box anymore. Women don't have to be a certain thing or say certain things or write a certain way or perform a certain way. We're setting that. We're showing what is possible now. And I think that's also what Chasing Molly is about, too, is about breaking those rules and those boundaries.
You know, something I figured out and I found out about the movie was basically it had a nice flow to it. It didn't feel like there was too much going in where most audience might get lost in a story and people can kind of nitpick and say, oh, that wasn't necessarily, you shouldn't have had that scene in it, or, you know, could have done away with this. When it comes to the whole process director thing, most fans don't really understand is that when you have an idea and a concept like this that comes out, to put it on paper takes a lot of not just one time, twice, or three times, but several revisions to come up with the perfect idea of what you want to portray. Can you guys talk about the process of that? I mean, first of all, coming up with the idea of what you wanted to do in terms of story and then putting it on paper and really organize it to, like you said, the pace and the style where it doesn't sound too scripted.
We definitely set out with this one to shoot it a certain way. And we kind of made Chasing Molly out of necessity. Me and Shelley have packaged a couple other feature-length comedies, tried to get investors. We actually had investors fall through a couple times. And so, I'm lucky to have a really nice camera package, some nice sound gear and the tools. And, through the last decade plus of working in the industry and doing every crew position under the sun, we've had made a plethora of contacts and just kind of waiting and storing those favors of when to pull them all together. And so we literally sat together and we're like, what can we make for ourselves that nobody can tell us a no, right? Like that we don't have to wait for anyone, that as soon as it's 90 pages script, we're ready to hit the ground running and go for it. And so that turned into Chasing Molly. And so literally a lot of the stuff you're talking about is basically built out of necessity and needing it to be simplicity because of how we were going to shoot the script. Most feature films shoot 60 days plus back to back to back. They would shoot the movie all out of order, because of budget or just ease for them. And so we didn't have that luxury, right? Because we just frankly didn't have the budget and don't have the money to have our crew together like that. And so we literally structured the movie based off things like that. We're like, oh, we live in LA, so the story's going to be set in LA. We can't really afford to have script supervisors or wardrobe or these big elaborate specialized crew positions. So what if we make the story like a Run the Gauntlet, where it's like a night, a day, and a night? And so that way, primarily, they're wearing the same thing every time. So if we have to shoot, nights and weekends or random long periods of time before we can shoot again, they just show up, they wear the same thing. It kind of alleviates anywhere that you can get thrown off your path and just focus on the really important things to us, which was primarily making sure everything is funny, right? Unfortunately, I know there's not as much lighting. There's not as much, makeup. There's not these big elaborate things that huge $100 million movies have. But what there is there's nobody telling us, hey, you can't say that. You can't put that on the screen. You shouldn't do that. It's basically like the most important thing to us was, is this funny or not? And how can we make it funnier? And frankly, if it's not, we're not going to shoot it because we just don't have the time to waste on set. And so a lot of the story of Chasing Molly kind of came together out of necessity and figuring out what we could use.
Go ahead, Josh.
Shelley, continue. Sorry.
So I was going to say, in improv, you start with nothing. And so it was almost fun, like, okay, we're going to do a pawn shop scene. We have three things, a tennis racket, candlesticks and pearls. So then it's like, okay, how can I make that funny? So then I write, a scene about, pearls being the gossip girls of the sea. And they're going to tell you things, a seashell won't, because, stuff like that. And so it wasn't like, oh, we have this great setup and I have this script, now let's find stuff. If we started with zero, or what do we have? And now let's make that as funny as possible. The character who plays Skullfucker, he is so funny when he gets upset. And I thought, well, how do I make this worse? Let's give him a baby Bjorn, three kids that aren't, you know, that he's been left with, and he's a drug dealer. And let's have him cuss in front of the kids, you know, obviously not really. But the script, it was just really fun to work with what we had. So like Josh said, it was made out of necessity, but then the freedom lies in, as you said, there was nothing in there that we didn't need or was fluff, or because if we didn't like it, it wasn't going, you're not going to see it. Where if you are working with a big, you know, studio and all this, they're going to put in what they want. Oh, you got to put that in. If we didn't like it or think it was great, we'd waste nights shooting. But if it wasn't great, we weren't going to put it in the movie. So then we could look back, and we made a film not just to shove something down people's throats and make money. It was because we actually believed in what we were making. And then we made the strongest, funniest product possible. So it was really, you know, the constraints of independent film. You know, it just didn't really compare to the benefits of the creativity and the, you know, just being so liberated and being able to be as funny as possible. And then being able to put what we wanted, the edits, the cuts we wanted up on screen. Because it was just Josh and I running the ship, you know, most movies have a lot of people on board, so stuff can kind of fall off or not, you know, projects fall through. But because it was the two of us really pushing this along, we made sure that nothing got dropped, and that from, you know, conception all the way to selling the movie and now PR, we made sure that it went all the way through. So it was just, even though it was a lot of work, the rewards far outweigh that.
You know, it's crazy because when you talk about this, we can relate it a lot to the current issues that's going on in actually wrestling, where a lot of people are talking about when you're in a big company like WWE, you're not allowed to express yourself a lot because you have to answer to a lot of people. And when you do an independent film like this, you have more creative liberties. So when you look back on the film and you had, you know, when you watched it fully and it got cut up and you got it to where you like it, how much of a sense of accomplishment do you feel once you watch the final product?
Man, so much. I mean, like, where do you start to even talk about that? It's a crazy feeling. And I will say personally for me, you know, our film came out May 7th through Gravitas Ventures. And, you know, getting that photo of my selfie of my parents holding the Blu-ray in their hand that they got from BestBuy.com that has my name that says director at the end of a feature-length film was really, really special. And I will say, like I said, it's not a traditional movie. I think when you're, you know, if you hear someone talking bad about it and you're like, oh, I was just the actor, or they're talking about something else that I wasn't involved in, I just did the visual effects or whatever, you can kind of brush it off. But like, as Shelley said, it's just me and her wearing so many hats throughout the entire project that it's like, you're so attached to it. And it's been like a journey, man. Not just, as I said, not just a couple months. Like it literally, we were shooting on nights and weekends for about a year and a half. The post-production process was about another year and a half after that. So literally this has been our baby for like 3 years, and just to get it across the finish line is an accomplishment in itself. And I'm just so happy that there's like a cohesive story, and let alone making people laugh. And then, you know, I'm lucky enough to know a bunch of people in the industry who can go make a movie if they had to, right? But selling it is a whole nother ballgame. And so when we actually sold it, that it was just, you know, the cherry on top for us.
Yeah, I mean, you make something and you're so proud of it, right? Like Josh said, when we finished it and it's where it's at, I'm dancing. Like I'm crying, I'm so happy. Josh is not an emotional person, but I'm like, and then for other people to enjoy this movie, you don't know. Like you think you're like, well, do we just love it? But then to actually have offers for it and people to respond the way they have, saying they love it and they're quoting things to you, it's almost like an outer body experience. It makes all the years of the grinding and the not knowing and all the years of having faith and believing and just keep you never giving up, right? Performing as much as possible for Josh, doing whatever it takes, you know, to shoot and to keep going, and for me to just keep performing and keep writing, and to then have something that's you really that speaks to us, like our baby, it's really surreal. And then to have people like also love it, it's more than someone even saying, hey, I like you. It's like when they like something you made, I don't know. It's even more miraculous than someone just saying, hey, I like you, Shelley, as a person. Like, okay. But my heart and soul is in Chasing Molly. What do you think of that? You know? So it's almost indescribable how emotional I get over this whole thing. And it's just been amazing, really.
You know, it's been amazing in terms of looking at not only the, obviously, the film Chasing Molly and what you guys have done and the work you guys have put in, like you've mentioned before, of seeing the final product. But nowadays for me and Jeff and I, when we talk about the world of professional wrestling, it seems from a fan standpoint, as much as we cover it and try to dissect it to make it see how the product can get better, it seems nowadays more than ever, with the power of social media, you guys are talking about being an independent film and trying to get it off the ground and promotions, a whole other avenue than just making a film. It seems in the world of professional wrestling, nowadays, if you're not WWE, where are you going to get all the attention? Where are you going to get all the promotion? Now, with the power of social media, it seems now that with anything, you can make a name for yourself if you promote and work it the right way, where you could be a household name in a matter of days, weeks, hours. Doesn't really matter. It could be a YouTube hit in the matter of seconds as long as there's a lot of people watching it. It seems the same feeling for me because I love independent films too. And sometimes I feel there's a lot of, in my personal opinion, a lot of parody in Hollywood right now where things are just being remade, rehashed, repackaged.
Mm-hmm. No more original stuff.
No more original stuff. People aren't taking chances on things that, you know, most people would kind of get away from because I think society now is a little bit more sensitive than it was back maybe 10 years ago. For you guys, when it comes to promoting this, and getting your voices out there now, is it now probably the best time, as we've mentioned, Jeff and I, in the world of professional wrestling, it's probably the best time to be either a talent or a fan because there's so much out there to look at. Is it the same feeling now in independent filmmaking because now you can put your product out there, you guys can be theoretically your own bosses, and there's just so much content to look at that you don't have to be focused on, you know, mainstream Hollywood in a sense to get a product out there and to get a project running?
For sure, man. I mean, it's even just for filmmakers, right? We're in like the golden age of media right now. I mean, everyone's got a 4K camera in their pocket. So it's super cool just to be able to, you know, before it used to say like, you know, you get on your soapbox and kind of preach what you're talking about. It's like everyone has that ability on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all these. And so literally you are your own little PR agent for what you want to put out on social media. And so, yeah, we are in the golden age right now of like being able to build that fan base yourself and not having to rely on other people or sources to get your message out to the world. And so that is 100% super key for something like our film that just frankly doesn't have the budget to pay a bunch of other people to do that. You know, we need as many avenues that are essentially free to be able to do that. And so, yeah, this, it's been awesome to have that at our fingertips.
Yeah, well, you first look at, you know, how am I going to get this out and how are we going to do this? And you realize with social media, one post can be seen by thousands and thousands of people. If Josh and I were to sit on any, you know, go to any event or any corner, you couldn't even meet that many people to promote. So the fact that you can reach that many people instantly is extremely exciting, you know, plus the fact that we don't have to, you know, buy a TV ad or run stuff in a newspaper and put the budget out for that. We don't have that. But what we do have is social media where you can let the people decide what's funny and what's great. So it's very liberating too for fans that it's not like you're going to be forced to see the same six movies and you better like one of those. You know, now we've actually, you know, we have a product and people can say, oh, I want to watch that. And they don't have to, you know, have it be something that's run on their television as a TV ad. They can find out about it over Twitter or Instagram. So I think it's great for, you know, the audience to have something else. I mean, I think we all crave something different. And like you said, in remakes and reboots and let's bring this back. And this is, you know, not only a trilogy, but it's a quadrilogy and it's a pre-trilogy. Let's see something different. And that was also one of the reasons why, you know, we're in this business, Josh and I, is to not do something that's already been done. We want our own voice and our own passion to be put out there. So it's really cool. And we also put in the movie people who have social media following in case we didn't sell it. Like Josh said, we were fortunate enough to be with Gravitas Ventures and they've done an amazing job of putting it out there. But if we didn't and we had to self-distribute, we wanted to make sure that there's people in the movie that would be able to help us with that. We've got a guy named Scar who plays the Hispanic lead. He's part of these viral videos called Cholos Try, which are very funny. So we found him. We've got Melanie Mellons, who's Tiffany Stanley. She's a Maxim model. So everyone's got their own following. So we made sure that, you know, as long as they were right for the part, that that would be someone we would look at to put in the movie if they also had a social media following.
Yeah, it's very smart.
Very smart. And speaking of picking somebody who was right for the part, I mean, I think picking Kurt Angle as Mr. Black was it was amazing. Yeah. He has that intimidating presence about him, but also he's very comedic, too, and very funny. Jeff and I have had the privilege of meeting Kurt several times, and it's just a joy to talk to. The thing about Kurt, though, he's not afraid to take risks. He's not afraid to, as he mentioned to us, like embarrass himself for the mere fact of entertaining people. And if you talk about improv, Shelley, you know, you look at the world of professional wrestling, that's the mecca, I think, in the world of improv. The ultimate improv. You're in front of a live audience, in front of millions of people watching it, and in the arena, you get one shot at it, but sometimes you gotta, you know, go by the tail of your, you know, seat of your pants and do something new. You know, how was it working for both you, Shelley, and Josh? How was it like working with Kurt? Were you guys surprised initially that Kurt was more open to certain ideas? Did they surprise you that he was kind of like more a multiverse? Because some people would think originally, a pro wrestler, oh, they're a bunch of Neanderthals. But you look at guys like The Rock. You look at guys like John Cena. You know, those are just pure examples that these guys aren't necessarily just professional wrestlers. These guys are improv artists. They're actors as well. And when they jump into the field of Hollywood, it's not necessarily a seamless transition, but something that they do enjoy
doing. They're more successful. Like you mentioned Cena and The Rock and Kurt Angle and Chris Jericho. They adapt well to when they got to do films, right?
For sure. I mean, our movie is super independent, and like we're trying to get so many pages done per day that we actually could like get the crew together for. So there's so much material to go through that you need someone that's going to come on set and nail it. Like, frankly, we don't have time to do a bunch of takes. And so Kurt was amazing on set. I mean, he came in, he nailed it. He wanted to give us exactly who we wanted for the character, Mr. Black. And like I said, he'd come in, he'd do one or two takes. We'd nail it, be super awesome. And like, we'd be ready to move on. And so I will say too, you know, just a cool little story about Kurt. Like when we booked him, I was like, hey, let's get his measurements so we can get him wardrobe, because I know what the last scene calls for. And he really wanted to wear his own custom suit because it's already, you know, fitted for him. That's super cool. And so cut to him on set, and I won't spoil anything, but he's like laying on the ground of like the dingiest, dirty LA backlot. And I'm in my mind, I'm like, oh, that's his personal suit right now. But Kurt's just giving us everything, man. I mean, he is killing it on set, and he was a true professional. You know, that's why he's an Olympic champion. He just, everything he does, he gives it 100%, and he definitely wanted to give us what we wanted for Mr. Black, and truly accomplished that. Because I know this character is nothing like his WWE personality, let alone how Kurt is in real life. And so, I think that was maybe a little bit of the allure of the role. But we know our movie is super independent and tiny. And so just for him to even come on and do it and just help us out, it was a true honor to have him be a part of the project.
Yeah. And, you know, as far as like being in scenes with him, you know, as an improviser, you have to have instant chemistry with people. And like you said, in WWE, you're shooting live. There's no room for failure. And it's kind of like that independent film and an improv. You've got to really swim right away. And so we didn't have rehearsals. We didn't have anything like that. No practice. So Kurt was instantly magnetic and dynamic on camera and in the scene. So we only needed one or two takes of him. And so it worked for our filmmaking too, because we didn't have the budget, like Josh said. So he was able to nail everything right away. And he didn't need like, oh, let's warm up and let's see if we can get into character. He just went for it. He took the risk. I think it's a treat for his fans to see him play something totally unlike, you know, his persona or who he is in real life. He doesn't curse in real life. He's got five kids. But when he's in his character, he's rattling off, you know, twaddle like it's something he says over breakfast. It's really, you know, just a testament to who he is as an actor. And not every, you know, wrestler or professional athlete can transition into acting. It definitely is not, we didn't, you know, you don't know if that's going to work. It happens that like The Rock and John Cena and Kurt can pull it off, but it's not everyone can. So it's really, I think it'll be a nice transition for him to go into a full, you know, blown acting career if that's what he wants. You know, he also has injuries that he sustained over the years, and yet he was really physical. Again, we're not going to spoil the end of the movie, but he's getting really physical despite, you know, his injuries. You wouldn't think he had anything, and he's getting really physical on camera. And so, I mean, you see why he's a champion. You see why he's a gold medalist. What goes in, the work that goes into that.
I mean, you can see why he won the Olympic gold medal with a broken freaking neck. So we're talking to director, writer Josh Sutherland, and also writer and actress Shelley Pack here. And one final one for me, guys, is when you look back on the movie, and there's got to be one scene that you either wrote and then you got to see, you know, the visual on it, and you're like, my God, that is hilarious. I know it may be tough to pick one favorite, but for each of you guys, which was your favorite scene?
Oh yeah, it's tough to pick just one. Yeah, I'm gonna
go ahead, John.
I will say I made a little cameo where I'm sitting on the toilet in the drug buy montage scene, and that might have been the highlight for me. But the actual scene that's my favorite is probably I think those cop scenes, the two cops in the cop car, are some of the funniest bits for me that we have.
Yeah, for me, I love the pawn shop scene. It's one that, you know, knowing how it was made out of, you know, really nothing, but then, you know, what came together, and Kevin Kirkpatrick really plays the pawn shop guy in like a super understated, creepily way. And then of course, Skullfucker is one of my favorite characters. Just having him go, you know, have an Aguila motherfucker. I don't know. I can see. So, but yeah, it's tough to pick, and it's great hearing what other people, you know, think is their favorite part. And I think there's something for everybody, unless you hate comedy, then maybe it's for you.
No, I like that pawn shop too. That one stood out because here you are, you're trying to get money, collect money, and you're trying to, you know, sell these things, and the pawn shop guy just constantly just speaking crazy stuff, and you're trying to save Atticus, and you know you're against the time, and he's just like rambling and really, really funny stuff, guys.
And honestly too, that's the dream for anybody who goes into the pawn shop, right, Shelly? You want the guy to outbid you the opposite way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And the way he pulls it off is just so great, you know. And it was just that scene to me just really stood out, and happened to get the best pawn shop. We didn't have that going in, and we were shooting, we couldn't shut down that set. So Josh is trying to get the best audio possible while we literally have two women like, oh, I love an Aquarius centerpiece. What do you think of this, Betty? Oh, I don't know. And that's going on for an hour while we're trying to shoot the scene. So just knowing that we got this clean audio and this hilarious scene, despite the fact of what we were working against, even makes it more triumphant and funny to me.
You know, for me, the final thing I'll say here in terms of the movie and the all-around product of Chasing Molly is the one word I can use to kind of describe it, which isn't really easy when you want to describe something you guys work so hard on to do, is passionate. It's a very passionate movie in the sense that there's so much involvement from you guys. You can kind of tell that there's a lot of it in the movie when you see it from a whole. So what I want to ask both of you guys is that, you know, in the world of wrestling, I ask this question, but I ask this question in general of anybody, because you guys have definitely worked worked your asses off basically to get this thing off the ground and to promote it. But the mere fact too, I think it comes when in terms of people are trying to be successful, very goal oriented, which it's very very easily seen that both of you are. It's very easy to get lost in the moment. Sometimes you get lost whether it's filming and your vision. You're so worried about getting your vision across that you're not enjoying the moment, the experience for what it's supposed to be. For you guys, are you guys enjoying the process and the ride, and not worrying so much about the destination? Are you guys allowed to give yourselves the ability to take a breath once in a while and say, you know what, this whole project, as tiring as it was, as much work as it was that you guys described, was an enjoyable one to do?
Yeah, for me, this is one that I really need to work on, and I have been working on. You know, I keep my head down and I just keep promoting and working and working. And I'll say to myself, Shelley, enjoy this moment. You made a feature film, you sold it, and people are watching it now. Take that in and enjoy this moment. And I've actually asked like you know, who's ever listening to please give me that to be able to really enjoy this, because again, we've worked so hard. Like you said, we worked our asses off, and to not enjoy it would be really just like, you know, would be a tragedy to not enjoy all of this work. So I'm definitely taking the time to take a breath and to sit with myself sometimes in silence and just be within myself and just be so grateful that I dedicated my life to my dream of being an actress. And despite what people said, like, oh, you never, you know, it's a one in a billion chance and nobody makes it, and how hard you struggle, that it was all worth it. And that, you know, there was a plan for your success, and it just, it took a long time and it took a lot of work, but I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Awesome.
Yeah. And just to add on top of that, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, it's not lost on us how rare this is. I mean, we definitely, like I said, I know a lot of people that can make a movie if they had to, but selling it is a whole nother game. And I know how hard and impossible that is. And frankly, like, you know, just so happens that I think making movies is probably one of the most fun things to do in the world, but it's also probably the hardest thing to do in the world. So there's that dichotomy that you just sometimes, yeah, like you said, have to sit back and realize that, like, man, I could be like, you know, could be like washing dishes or doing something else or like laying brick, or, you know, there's a bunch of other crazy ways to make a living out in the world, and I get to create something out of nothing. And so there definitely is that moment of, like, as Shelley said, we just keep our head down. We just keep grinding and grinding and grinding and trying to get it out and finish it and out, you know, sell it and outsold and get it out to as many people as we can to see it. And I don't think we'll ever stop doing that. But we definitely have taken a quick, brief moment to pause and enjoy it for a second, for sure.
Well, it's great you guys are able to do that, because it would be unfair, like Shelley said, it would be unfair for both of you not to take at least that moment to appreciate it in the process, because you guys owe it to yourselves instead of moving on to the next project. So that's great to hear, Jeff.
Oh, no, it really is. And again, the movie is Chasing Molly. It's available on DVD, Blu-ray, anywhere you guys can find it. Definitely take a look. It is, I'm telling you, like Brian was saying before, it, you know, it gets to the point. You know, it's funny, it's witty.
It's different.
It's different. And, you know, if you're a wrestling fan, you get to see Kurt Angle, you know,
in a different light
that you normally don't see him. So check it out. And definitely it's a good idea you guys are also talking to the wrestling fans, because like I said, one thing you will notice when you get feedback is a lot of the wrestling fans are loyal. They love Kurt Angle. They love their wrestlers, and they're going to follow anything that they do. And you're going to get good feedback from them.
Yeah, we really appreciate all the support we've gotten from the wrestling community. And for such a rough and tumble, like, sport, everyone's been really super kind. So it's been really amazing, the loyalty and the love and the support that's there. And we're very, very grateful. And we really hope, you know, you watch our movie. It's on iTunes. It's on demand. It's on Amazon Prime. Like you said, DVD and Blu-ray. And so really just, you know, support independent film and come see Kurt as something completely different than you know him as. It's going to be a real treat.
Guys, thank you so much. High Spot Podcast on Body Slam Net. Really enjoyed the interview, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks again. Thank you for having us.
All right, Trendsetter Chasing Molly. Definitely go out and check it out. Really a good movie, really funny. And our thanks go out to Shelley Pack and Josh Sutherland. And hopefully, you know, we'll hear from them again. And Kurt Angle was really funny in this movie as well. That was our Collar and Elbow interview of the week. And it is an apparel brand founded by Al Snow, mixing wrestling passion with street passion. Check out the entire summer fashion line by going to collarandelbowbrand.com. Save 10% on your entire online purchase just by entering promo code HIGHSPOTPODCAST, all in caps. Chasing Molly here on the High Spot Podcast, Trendsetter.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a wrestling fan, you got what you wanted out of the interview, because the mere fact that you brought it up pretty early too, that, you know, wrestling fans are so dedicated, they're so loyal, that whenever a wrestler that they've gained on garnered respect for and seen their career go before their very eyes and seen the ups and downs, will follow them to the ends of the earth, basically. And this is just a perfect example too, to see a guy like Kurt Angle, who we've known, he's been the comedic guy, he's been the serious guy, he's going to break your ankle, I won the Olympic gold medals with a broken freaking neck, to see him in this type of role it's kind of interesting. And then you see the comedy of the sarcasm, the ad-libbing of seeing certain scenes in terms of you would normally see Kurt Angle in. It's kind of funny. And the whole synopsis of this movie is also kind of something you kind of chuckle about, because the mere fact that it just seems so outrageous, you can't help but laugh.
Yeah, so again, thanks to Shelley Pack and Josh Sutherland. Now, this weekend, Trendsetter, we got a bunch of wrestling again. It is an amazing summer.
More wrestling?
You have more wrestling, Trendsetter. We've got Evolve, their anniversary show. You've got also going up against Fight for the Fallen as well on Bleacher Report Live. You can download that and watch it for free. So you can either go to the WWE Network, watch the Evolve show, watch Fight for the Fallen. But a lot of people are talking about, well, you know, what a coincidence that the Evolve show is going to go head-to-head with Fight for the Fallen. You're going to get to see, of course, all the stars from NXT. Well, most of the stars from NXT compete in this Evolve event. You also see AEW Fight for the Fallen. You will see the Young Bucks go up against Cody and Dustin. You know, everyone knows now, you know, I don't need a friend. I don't need a partner. I need my older brother. So
there's a tear in your eye.
With a tear in my eye. And that's going to be one of the matches there. Chris Jericho is going to have the live mic, so he's going to say whatever on his mind. I'm sure that should be entertaining.
Still looking for a thank you.
Still looking for a thank you. And, of course, he's definitely going to do a great job promoting his matchup with Hangman Page at All Out coming up in Chicago on Labor Day weekend. But just your thoughts. Evolve and Fight for the Fallen, what are you going to be watching?
Oh, wow. If I had two TVs, I'd be watching both at the very exact same time. There's nothing better, Jeff, nowadays than healthy competition. That's what this really is. People are like, oh, why is this being pitted against this one? They could clearly have done this a day later or blah, 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 etc. But it's competition. It's guys wanting to be the top of their game on one particular night. And it's hard. It's going to be hard to debate. It's like watching your favorite sports team. Are you going to watch this team or this team? And, you know, I wish we had, you know, Jeff, there will be a certain point, I have no doubt in my mind, with, you know, with the NFL and the popularity it has, you know, if you have NFL Red Zone now, there's no doubt you're going to have wrestling Red Zone now where certain matches are happening at a certain time. The culmination of the match, we're going home. Oh, they're going home now. We got to get to that one. That's what's going to happen because there's just so much out there, so much content to look at. It's impossible to make a decision. But here's the thing, too. Whatever decision you decide to make, whether it be Evolve or AEW, most likely 10 times out of 10, you're going to leave entertained. So whichever one you choose, enjoy. And that's one of the joys of not only Jeff and I covering this, but being a fan. You get to choose what you want to watch now. You're not just, okay, this is going to be the only thing on right now this night for terms of wrestling programming. No, you have two shows. Two shows that are definitely going to go out of their way to steal the night. And that's the great part about wrestling. It's healthy competition. You can't go wrong either way.
Yeah, you're going to have Hangman Page take on Kip Sabian. You're going to have SCU versus the Lucha Bros. So it's going to be another great night of professional wrestling. And then, of course, Extreme Rules comes your way from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
And you had to ruin it right there, Jeff.
Get it in there, though, because to me it was a lackluster Raw and SmackDown heading into this.
Kind of funny. I didn't realize it was in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania for Extreme Rules. So it's like, a little Philly ECW, hardcore type wrestling type of thing.
So, and of course, you're going to have a winner-take-all Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans against Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins. Mm-hmm. Now, we...
The man of the man.
The man's man. And there's a shirt actually out there for Seth Rollins to wear that he's property of Becky Lynch, but...
problem claiming that.
No problem whatsoever. So here's the thing, Trendsetter, and I have no problem. I'm happy for Seth. I'm happy for Becky. I was a big fan of the man when it first started. Seth Rollins has always been someone I like, but there's so many things going on that's so very wrong in this, and I'm just going to put it out there. Seth is a heel. I don't like this Seth Rollins. Becky Lynch... What happened to the man, you know, and now they're tag teaming, they're putting the relationship out on display for the world to see, and I am an old school trendsetter, and I just don't like this one bit. You know, it's just to me, leave that part, you know, to the side. I know there's nothing kayfabe anymore with Instagram and Twitter, social media, but here's the thing. To me, when I see them do things like that, Dirty Dancing thing that everyone does now.
That's a live event, though.
That's a live event.
That's off camera.
But it's going to be on social media, though. Mm-hmm. And when I see that, it makes me root for them even less. And here's why, because you've shown your weakness now. Becky Lynch is the man, but you know what? She's shown her flaw. Just like Superman has his kryptonite, Seth Rollins, who comes off as the Beast Slayer, he has shown his weakness. And what is that weakness, Trendsetter? It is the weakness that all heroes have, and that is
ego.
Once you love, that is your weakness. Once you put your heart on your sleeve, love is your biggest weakness. And if you're a true heel, then you're going to take advantage of that, and they have shown their weakness. That is why I don't like them, because the man used to be this invincible force. She would walk in there, you know, beat up people, and it'd be the coolest thing that you've seen in a while. It kind of had that Stone Cold aspect. But did Stone Cold ever loved, maybe with Deborah, but still.
Yeah, he's part of the Alliance.
But still, it was...
But that was more of a comedic side. It was never something they drew attention to, like the drawing with Seth
and
Becky right now. And I feel with that, though, you know, wouldn't you say that the main focus is on the relationship rather than the two individuals? And I get it. It's part of the storyline. But if you're going to make... And here's the thing, right? And here's the thing I laugh about, Jeff, because people talk about the whole thing, oh, Brock Lesnar is so bad for the business, right? Okay, Seth Rollins has defended it how many times, right? He's been on Raw every single Monday. But now instead of seeing Seth Rollins in a storyline where it's been him focused against an opponent or opponents trying to take what he's worked so hard to achieve to defeat the Beast, he's now sharing the spotlight. Not that there's anything wrong with sharing the spotlight with your significant other, but the main focus now isn't on you anymore. It isn't about the Universal Championship. It's about the Universal Championship and the Raw Women's Championship mixed all together in this triangle or this love. Not even a love triangle. There's no love involved in here because the only loving couple is Seth and Becky Lynch. To me, it's just, you know, Baron Corbin, right place, right time. So is, you know, this whole storyline going. And I just think it just takes away from the fact that you want to build the Universal Championship. You want to build the Raw Women's Championship. Keep the two separated, because the mere fact that you're involving more the importance of this relationship, you're taking away from what you said, the momentum of what Becky Lynch had and whatever momentum that Seth Rollins had after WrestleMania. So to me, it's easy for me to say it hurts hindsight 2020. I can play Monday night quarterback all I want, but I feel like the emphasis more is on the relationship. So if it goes south, what happens then? I don't care about the relationship. I care about the Universal Championship. I care about the Raw Women's Championship. Who's defending it? What's going on? So to me, it loses its translation. It's hard for me as a fan to get invested in it. But on the opposite side of that, though, too, how many people are head over heels about John Cena and Nikki Bella?
Yeah.
So it works both ways.
Yeah.
But for these two individuals who have worked so hard to make themselves so independent from anybody and don't need anybody's help, to see them now needing each other, it's kind of weird to see.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll just leave it at that, though. But Extreme Rules is this Sunday. I mean, AJ and Ricochet for the U.S. title.
That's going to be good.
Is back together. Hey, any chance you can get those two guys, hopefully they get their time in. Hopefully it's 20-25
minutes.
Oh,
you know they're going to get their time in. You said something pretty significant to me. You said when you saw AJ and Ricochet wrestle on Raw the first time for just a normal one-on-one match, you're like, wow, it's showing you the significance of the importance of the United States Championship. When you have two workers like that in the ring, and they're showing how hard they're working because they want to win the title, it shows you the importance of that title and that championship or belt, whatever you want to call it nowadays. Vince isn't listening to me right now, so I'm going to call it a belt.
That's a belt. I mean,
you're going to look at it as, wow, this is an important thing to watch, which has been lacking from the United States title. And may I dare say right now, Shinsuke and Finn Balor are going to wrestle on SmackDown. And does anybody care about that? No, because they've both been kind of garnered insignificant. And right now he's the Intercontinental Champion. And once again, the Intercontinental title is in limbo. Nobody cares about it anymore.
Yeah, man. And again, though, what can you say? I mean, any other matches there that catch your eye heading into Extreme Rules? I mean, Undertaker and Roman Reigns against Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre.
Not really, because I'm kind of over the whole Shane McMahon thing. Here's the thing, you know, as much as I hate on it, and we can all hate on it, guys, it's perfectly fine here. The members of the crew, if you don't hate on it, then you're not really a member of the crew if you don't like it.
Oh, no, no. But we accept all members of the crew here.
No, I'm not saying you're not a member of the crew. It's not that you're not a member if you don't like it. If you don't like it, you are a member, because that's what that's how we feel about the whole situation.
All inclusive.
But despite all that, Jeff, it's clear to me the direction they're going in. You can't deny it. they're leaning more toward Shane. The rumors I've been hearing is could be a heel turn for the Taker. Who knows if that happens?
Oh, I doubt.
They're really focusing on Shane McMahon right now. And here's the thing: as much as you want to hate him, same argument we have with Baron Corbin, right? We don't really like his work, but he does a great job of having that crowd hate him. And Shane is doing a great job of having that crowd hate him. As obnoxious as the best in the world thing is, it's working. So, you know, more power to him. I can see this continuing on right now. Here's the thing. With all that being said, I kind of lose the factor of the main person in this whole storyline that people want to focus on but has been, you know, kind of lost through relevancy, in my opinion, Roman Reigns. Reigns is supposed to be coming back, dealt with leukemia, had to come back, and now he is lost. Is it a rivalry between Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre? Is it a rivalry between him and Shane? What's going on here? Roman Reigns getting lost in this whole shuffle.
Here's the funny thing, though. I think it's setting down the crowd, really. There's no really... Besides you bringing it up right now, there's been no swell of fans saying, where's Roman Reigns? Why isn't he in the title picture? So I think I'm just happy where he is right now. Let him, you know...
Oh, yeah, you're not going to hear a complaining from me, but here's the thing. Who is the main guy on both shows?
Yeah.
Kind of hard. A while ago, I could say it was AJ. And the other one I could say was Brock Lesnar.
There's no more brand split.
No.
Now, the rumors are saying that Paul Heyman and Bischoff, after SummerSlam, they feel that the only way you can separate both shows is to actually have a brand split. So they're actually talking about maybe having another draft again after SummerSlam. Really sticking to it. But I don't know, man. Like, I'm not a...
Fool me once, Jeff. Yeah. Shame on me. Fool me twice. Go F yourself is what I say. Because here's the thing. I love how we haven't talked about it too. Paul Heyman now going to be running things on Raw. You know, no general manager, no backstory like that. And Eric Bischoff, the production side on SmackDown Live, as they both now go to their separate networks.
I'm for it, though.
But here's the thing. If you're going to now, you know, enforce another draft for me, how am I take it seriously, honestly?
Yeah, the wild card rule.
They should just keep them separate after SummerSlam. No draft. This is the way it is. You're never going to see this guy on this show again until there is another draft, which is legit, and that's it. The mere fact that they're intertwining deludes the illusion, and, you know, we know we're grown individuals here. We're talking about illusions. But, yeah, it deludes the illusion they're watching two separate programs because they all seem like they're the same thing. So why bother watching SmackDown? Or if I'm watching SmackDown, why bother watching Raw? Because I'm going to see the same guy in here next week.
You know,
that's what hurts.
As you're talking about that, I'm looking at the card for Evolve.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
You got Adam Cole taking on Akira Tozawa for the NXT Championship. You've got the Evolve Championship online versus the WWN Champion. You've got a winner-take-all Austin Theory, good friend of the show, against JD Drake. You've got Joe Gacy's on this card. Matt Riddle takes on Drew Gulak. You've got another match with Josh Briggs. We know Josh Briggs. He's going to be on the show, too.
Yeah,
so it's going to be a very, very star-studded show here. And you got Adam Cole, baby, on it. Austin Theory, who, you know, I'm wondering, like, why is he not signed with a major company yet? You know, Matt Riddle's on there. Anthony Henry is on the card as well. You've got Sean Maluda. You know, so a lot of stars on the show, star-studded on both sides. Yep. So the true winners are the fans, Trendsetter. The true winners on the fan are the fans. And before we wrap up here, I know we're winding it down on today's show, on today's episode, but I did a couple of polls here, and I want to get your opinion here. 4th of July was last week, and I put out there who to you is your most patriotic wrestler of all time. And I put there Hulk Hogan, Kurt Angle, I put Sergeant Slaughter, and The Patriot. And everyone got on me because I did not put Hacksaw Jim Duggan on there. Should I have replaced The Patriot with Hacksaw Jim Duggan?
I think I would have to agree with the crew on that one. I jokingly was going to say The Patriot out loud until you actually mentioned, like, oh, wow, you actually included The Patriot on there too. But I can understand why people would forget it too, because for the most part, guys, in Duggan's career towards, you know, the middle stages and towards the end of his career, was he more like USA, you know, walking the 2x4 with the red, white, and blue. For the early on stages of career, prior to, I think, past WrestleMania 5, WrestleMania 6, he was really doing the USA thing. So I could see where it's lost in translation in terms of him being patriotic. Now everything is USA and ho and stuff like that. But yeah, I understand that too. But the Patriot, you know what I mean? And nothing against the Patriot too, but you know, that was something that was just like, I saw during the whole Bret Hart Canada versus the U.S. thing, and I never really cared so much for the character itself. I thought you were going to say Captain...
Captain America?
Was Hogan Captain America?
He was Captain America.
He was Captain America. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It wasn't Hogan. It was somebody who looked like Hogan. My mistake.
Yeah, I got shit on for not putting Hacksaw Jim Duggan on there, although Hulk Hogan ended up winning it.
Yeah, of course.
So Hulk Hogan won it. So he was Mr. 4th of July, the most patriotic
wrestler.
Now,
I got to ask you this.
People were saying John Cena, too.
Get out of here, guys. Seriously, come on.
One more, but go ahead.
No, well, 4th of July, right? It was all about patriotism. It was all about United States, USA. Which Hogan theme did you like most? Real American, or the
man.
WCW one?
Real American.
Some people would tell me they love the WCW version of Hogan's theme.
Cody loves the WCW version of Hulk Hogan's entrance. Cody loves that one. But I'm old school. I'm real American. And then the other poll that I put up there during Slammiversary was watching the Elgin and the Brian Cage match. I tweeted out, if you were starting a company, which two big men would you rather have? Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley, or Brian Cage and Michael Elgin? And
can you switch both of them? What do you mean, intertwine them? Does it have to be just those two and those two? Could you mix and match?
No. You have to have WWE guys. Honestly, to me, it's a no-brainer. It's Brian Cage and Michael Elgin. And that won, actually, the vote. We got Elgin and Cage over Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley. Because, honestly, Braun Strowman, yes, he's a monster among men, but he's been toiled in mediocrity. And, you know what, I think he's limited in the ring. And I think Bobby Lashley's also limited in the ring. And when I'm watching Elgin and Cage go at it in an amazing match where, like I said, there were cruiserweights and heavyweights bodies, I think they can just do more in the ring. So I went with them, and it was easy by far. It was a no contest.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Really?
I believe
really,
you.
Miz.
I believe.
So, anyways, you know, those are the two polls we put up there. We always love the interaction with you and the fans. Again, follow us on all our social media. Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, anywhere where podcasts are available. On the YouTube channel, subscribe there for our video content. Also, follow Adventures with the Trendsetter. And again, want to thank our member of the crew, Lisa, who actually went to the G1, took great pictures, and, you know, did a fantastic job with the video, the press conferences. So, I want to thank her for doing an outstanding job.
Yes, awesome job, and the photos were amazing. Great quality, great position in terms of where she was located and doing this. I know she was probably running around
it was a one-man show.
Exactly, running around. That's not easy. I know what that's like, especially when you're doing video, audio, and taking pictures. It is very stressful, so I thank Lisa for that, and the audio and the quality of the video
that came out
for the press conferences.
Cassidy was awesome. Thanks you. It was just a great job by Lisa. I want to thank her. A really important part of the crew.
I think Buster, too. Buster is a huge part of this.
Buster is the mascot for the Jersey Wrecking Crew. So, Buster, you did a tremendous job. I know you were sad with that Lisa had to go get.
Well, yeah, he had a big sacrifice. Mom had to leave, and he had to deal with the brunt of the household. So,
Very true.
Enough credit where credit is due. Buster had to deal with the emotional anxiety of not having mom home.
Yeah, Buster, Larry, whatever you want to call him, he's the mascot of the Jersey Wrecking Crew. So, again,
he's my wingman.
He's your wingman. He's actually going to take my place at the AVF for you, right? He's going to hold the camera and probably do a better job than I do.
Yeah, definitely.
Come on, let's be honest.
Yeah, there's no doubt on that. I know I butcher on a lot of things, too, but that's pretty accurate, too. He'll probably do a better job holding the camera than you would.
All right, guys. Listen, hope you had a great 4th of July. Again, next week we'll probably be recapping Extreme Rules and Fight for the Fallen and Evolve as well. And who knows what else is going to happen in the world of professional wrestling. I am Jeff Martin alongside the Trendsetter. Again, bidding you adieu, Trendsetter. And again, we not only do this. Wait, what do we do?
Well,
I haven't done this in a while.
Yeah, I haven't done this in a while, and usually I'm the one that closes out, guys. So that tells you Jeff's a little rusty on this. But, you know, we thank you for listening to the episode of the High Spot Podcast. We'll catch you next week. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. And remember, we do this, Jeff, for one reason and only one reason only.
Right,
we don't do it for anybody else. We do this for you, the crew.